Welcome to the 21st. I'm Julian Haida. Coming up later this hour, Illinois is one of just a handful of states that mandates Holocaust education in the classroom. But are kids learning what they need to? And Chaz Ebert joins us at the end of the hour for a preview of the 22nd annual Ebert Fest. But first, every 4 years, we've talked primaries in Iowa, New Hampshire, now Nevada's top of mind. By the time Illinois voters usually cast their votes, more than half of the states have already voted. And so that means that more than half of the delegates would have already won. But with such a large field of candidates this year, for the first time in decades, Illinois voters could help decide who gets the Democratic nomination for president when we head to the polls on March 17th. For more on this, we're joined on the line by author and journalist Edward McClelland. He recently wrote about the primaries for Chicago Magazine. And also joining us from Chicago, we have Kitty Kurth. She's a political consultant who's been working on Democratic primary campaigns in Illinois since the 1980s. Both of you, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Hi, Kitty.
Hey, Ted.
So, Ted, I'm going to start with you.
Good to talk to you. Okay, start with me.
Sure. So this is the time of year that a lot of us are talking about Democratic primaries. I mean, some people have been talking about it for like a year. But we're hearing about states like Iowa, New Hampshire, not really Illinois. Can you explain why Illinois is usually like a non-factor when it comes to primaries?
Well, usually we vote later in the process, and by then somebody has, piled up enough delegates to either, clinch the nomination or be the front runner. But I think this year, as you said, there are so many candidates, and Illinois is the state that's most typical of the nation in its demographics, and it's traditionally been a state that kind of goes for middle of the road candidates, establishment candidates, and it could be the state that kind of breaks a deadlock between a progressive candidate and a moderate candidate, if that's what it comes down to by March 17th.
Sure. So, Ted, your piece in Chicago Magazine that I mentioned is called "Why Illinois Will Matter This Primary Season." So let's get into some of those reasons. Let's run down the list of some of the reasons you outline. I wanted to start with the sheer size of the candidate field. I mean, there's a lot of Dems running. Like, how's that different from past years, other than the obvious?
Well,
why is that a good
thing
for Illinois?
Yeah, I mean, 4 years ago, it was just, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton, she won by 2 percentage points. Illinois has always... In the contested primary era, Illinois has always gone with a winner, except for 1 year, and that was 1988 when Paul Simon, our favorite son, was the candidate, and he won. We're a bellwether.
Sure. So, Kitty, Ted mentioned 1988. It seems to be like that was the last time that Illinois was this important. We are a bellwether, as he mentioned. What was going on in 1988?
Well, I'm going to talk about that, and then I reserve the right to talk about California, too, even though we never like to think that California is more important than Illinois. But back in 1988, we had a lot of candidates in the race. They called him the six-pack at the time, but Mike Dukakis was the front runner. Paul Simon was in the race. There was another Illinois favorite son, Jesse Jackson, in the race as well. Dick Gephardt won Iowa that year. So all kinds of things. Gary Hart was the front runner for a long time, and then he was out. It was an exciting year, and things changed and changed. And Illinois mattered then because Simon won and got delegates and got to have a little bit of a say at the convention. This year, Illinois, I would argue, is going to matter a lot more, because I don't think that there is going to be any kind of clear message coming out of Super Tuesday. And let's talk about Super Tuesday for a second and California. I've been trying to get national reporters to focus on California since November, because California actually started voting the same day as the Iowa caucuses. That was the first day for write-in voting in California. California's in polling place election is on Super Tuesday. 494 delegates come out of California. if we look at Illinois and Nevada and South Carolina and Iowa and New Hampshire combined, we don't have as many delegates as California.
So the assumption might be that, you know, come and go Super Tuesday, all of this might be moot because we're 2 weeks after Super Tuesday and, you know, California will have their say.
I think the opposite, though. I think California will have their say, but also Texas votes on that day and has almost 300 delegates. In addition, you've got all the southern states. I don't think there is going to be one clear answer coming out of Super Tuesday. And just to indulge me in a little bit of reminiscence, Illinois was the next big state after Super Tuesday in 1988. So we had a great Dukakis Super Tuesday election night at the old Vic Theater on Sheffield and Belmont. We had 75 TV screens and 150 national media in Illinois on Super Tuesday because the candidates were looking forward to the next big state, which was Illinois. This time, Illinois votes on the same day as Florida, so I think we will break up some of those candidates' visits with Florida, but I think there'll be a lot of activity in Illinois before our primary.
Sure. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, California, Texas, huge states. Ted, in your article in Chicago Magazine, you talk about obviously the number of candidates, which you mentioned, but you know, Illinois doesn't have as many delegates as California and Texas, but we do have a lot of delegates.
We have 155, and it's interesting. They're distributed. Some places have more delegates than others. If districts around Chicago, they each have 8 delegates, and in Southern Illinois, they have 3 delegates because it's based on how much of the Democratic vote you turn out in previous elections. So those are the areas that are really going to be getting the focus. But before we talked, I wrote an article, Illinois Primary Power Rankings, for the magazine. And I think I would put Sanders on top right now just because he has this unbreakable coalition of 25% to 30% of the voters. And I think that could be enough in a 7-candidate field.
Yeah, and Ted, looking at, I had forgotten that that Hillary only won by 2 points in the primary
right.
against Sanders. And honestly, looking backwards, that should have been a huge flag then that Hillary was going to be in trouble. Because for all the times that the Clintons have spent in Illinois since 1992 and before, she should have won Illinois by 15 points.
Right. And, you know, I looked at she did better in the more urban counties and counties with a bigger African-American population. She went to Cook County and Peoria and St. Clair and Alexander. And then Sanders tended to do better in the suburbs and then in the rural part of the state.
So that's I want to mention who we're talking to. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Julian Haida. You just heard from Ted McClelland, who's a Chicago-based journalist. He wrote about Illinois' place in the primaries for Chicago Magazine. Also with us is Katie Kurth. She's a political consultant. She's worked on a bunch of Democratic primary campaigns. You know, we were talking a little bit about 2016, and I want to bring in the role of you know, super delegates. You talked about how Illinois has a lot of delegates. You know, and you know, there's the fact that, you know, Illinois is a pretty diverse state, right? We have a rural area, an urban area. We have blue areas, we have red areas. But I wanted to ask about what role do you think super delegates will play into Illinois' role here? First of all, what are they? And I mean, I looked at some of the super delegates from 2016. I mean, it looks like Chicago aldermen, county clerks, really, I mean, like political appointees. What role do you think they'll have in this upcoming election?
Well, Ted, I wanted to ask you a question. The 150, I think that's the number of elected delegates. I think our total is more like 184, but I'm not positive. I need to check myself.
I do too. I was just looking over the rules.
Yeah, I
the party
think
rules.
And this is one of those questions where if I'm wrong, I apologize to everybody. But I think the 150 is the number that we elect. And then the number with superdelegates is about 184. The superdelegates are, Julian, they're congressmen. Some are aldermen. They're DNC members. And they are people that I would expect that all of the campaigns are lobbying those superdelegates right now for their endorsements. And they can go with anybody they want. I would suspect, and here, you know, if I were writing the novel about 2020 rather than a news story about 2020, the novel about 2020 would have Bernie Sanders winning all the primaries and all of the Democratic superdelegates being in a panic and trying to coalesce around some other candidate to stop Bernie. That's in the fiction about 2020.
Yeah, I can't imagine that if he goes with the most delegates and they give it to somebody else, that's going to go over very well with the Sanders voters, especially as much as the Democrats can complain about the Electoral College.
So, I mean, I hear both of you talking a little bit about strategy, right? I mean, whether it be, you know, how do you canvass a state like Illinois that is so diverse, unlike New Hampshire and Iowa, that does have the urban-rural kind of difference. I wanted to ask especially, Ted, about former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He's leveraged some of those strategies in really, really kind of unusual ways. Can you talk a little bit about how that's different than maybe Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg, who have been, you know, successful in Iowa, New Hampshire, and you know, how Bloomberg might play in Illinois?
Well, I mean, Iowa, New Hampshire, because they're smaller states and because it's such a long process, they're more sort of retail politicking states. You know, you go to the steak fry, you go to the county meeting, and you shake people's hands. But Bloomberg is just throwing a ton of money at Illinois. He's spending more money than any other candidate.
Which is a little crazy, Ted, because Bloomberg doesn't have any delegate slates in Illinois.
Right. And I how is that going to work? I mean, if he wins 15% of the congressional district, is he still going to get delegates out of that
district? No, because he didn't file any delegate slates. I don't think. Although, honestly, you know, rules are made to be broken and changed.
Right.
And what might happen closer after Super Tuesday, if any candidates do drop out, Bloomberg can lobby them for their endorsements. And then if those candidates get elected as some other candidates' delegates, they could go and then pledge at the convention. They could pledge their support to Bloomberg. But I think our weird early filing, you know, you had to file your delegate slates and recruit your delegate slates back in September, back in August and September, so you could be passing petitions in October, November, and December. And Bloomberg wasn't even running then. And I think that's going to be a disadvantage for him. But
yeah,
remember, these are party elections and not municipal elections. So just like the party kind of changed the rules, the national party changed the rules for this latest debate, the Illinois Democratic Party, if they wanted to, could probably change their rules about delegates.
So, I mean, I wanted to, I mean, I can imagine, you know, I mean, obviously I have the privilege of working in a radio station and I get to read all this stuff every day. So I imagine, you know, keeping up with these rules being just, you know, mind-numbingly frustrating for average voters. And speaking of voters out there, I mean, you know, Illinois has changed quite a bit. You know, we're talking about Illinois being this diverse place, but, you know, we're facing population loss. We're facing a lot of shifts in kind of our demographics. Will that factor in here? I mean, do you think that, you know, for example, Governor Pritzker's suggestion that Illinois, you know, should go first is perhaps behind the curve?
Oh,
no. Well, I don't think anybody should go first.
You want a national primary day, Ted?
Yeah, well, or maybe a selection of states from all around the country. I mean, If Illinois went first, all the candidates would be in here making deals with county chairmen and ward bosses. And, you know, do we want the whole nation decided by Illinois politics?
And I'm going to talk about it from a really much more practical matter. It's really hard to campaign in 14 states all summer long, or yet again, 50 states all
right.
summer long. Iowa voters and New Hampshire voters deserve a lot of respect. They put a lot of time into this. They are good at this, and they go and talk to those candidates and listen to those candidates more than other people would ever have the patience for.
Sure, but they're not reflective of the nation. And in a general election, you do have to campaign in 14 states or 50 states. So
yeah.
I want to thank you for the lively discussion. I mean, we're on a clock here. We gotta get out
right,
on time.
We'll agree about something.
Well, thank you for giving us some much needed analysis, Ed McClellan. Ted McClellan is a Chicago-based author and journalist. He recently wrote about Illinois' role in the primaries. For Chicago Magazine. We also spoke with Kitty Kurth, who's been working on a bunch of Democratic campaigns since the 1980s. Both of you, thanks so much for adding so much to this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank
nice
you.
To talk to you again,
Take
Kitty.
Care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.